Accession number 27070, Reel 1.
Douglas Gerard, Reel 1. Can you tell me first of all where you were born?
I was born at Chesterfield, Derbyshire.
And what did your father do?
He and my mother were the were in charge of the Masonic Hall at Chesterfield. Mother did the cooking and my father did the rest of the business concerned with the Masonic movement.
Right. And where did you go to school?
I started school, infant school at Chesterfield, and then the family moved in about 1926 to Haslemere in Surrey.
Oh, right. Quite a big change then.
It was.
Yes. Was that for work?
It was. My father changed his job and took up a position at Haslemere.
Right. And you went to school there then?
And I went to school at Haslemere and then to the technical school at Guildford.
And what age did you leave school?
I left school at 15.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers, one 5 years younger than me, who was in the Navy during the war, and another brother who was born around Battle of Britain Day, and he went into the RAF and retired a few years ago as group captain.
Right. So, had you thought about a career in the military when you left school?
No.
And what did you do when you first left school?
Well, when I was taking an examination at the technical school, I'm not sure whether it was when I started there or when I finished there, more likely when I started there. And I was asked what I wanted to do when I left school, what I wanted to be, and I said a wireless operator. Wireless radio was my hobby, and I had no great interest in other matters apart from my hobby, which was radio.
And so what job did you do?
Well, at that time, the family were on the move again, and I left school and took up a temporary sort of job in an office at Guildford. And there were no great prospects there. But after about a year or so, I got a job as a junior reporter on a new local newspaper, which was started at Haslemere. So I took up that job, and I was there for a year or more when the family again moved, this time to Gloucestershire, and Mother sent me a cutting from the Gloucestershire Echo in which they were advertising for a junior reporter, and I applied for the job, and I got it. So I came to Cheltenham and took a job on the editorial department of the Gloucestershire Echo.
Right, and that would be what? Sort of 37?
That would have been 1937.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then lots of talk of war then, did you?
There was a lot of talk of war, and I knew pretty well that in 39 that there was going to be a war, and as I was aged 20, I was going to be one of the first people called up. So I and volunteered for the RGH and enlisted at a pub in Cheltenham.
Oh, really? Which pub was that?
It was a pub which I think is now closed, but it was just in the Sherdington Road in Cheltenham.
Oh, right, yeah. The Lickhampton Inn?
It might have been the Lickhampton Inn, yes, yes.
So what was the atmosphere when you went along to join up there? Were there a lot of people there?
Or? Well, there were quite a lot. Young men were joining. And I encouraged some of my friends to join, which they did eventually. And I told them that better to join a tank unit than the infantry, because in a tank unit you travelled around in a tank, when in infantry you had to walk around or march around with a pack on your back. So ultimately, when things got tough during the war, these friends of mine would say it was all my fault that they were in this sort of trouble.
So you actually enlisted, but you didn't actually join a unit straight away, is that right?
Well, I enlisted in what was the formation of the Cheltenham Squadron of the 2nd RGH, which was a new unit. There was a 1st RGH, but this was a new unit with squadrons Cheltenham, a squadron at Gloucester, and a squadron from the Stroud, Tetbury, Dursley area.
Mm-hmm. And when did you actually physically join them?
Well, I was called up on the outbreak of war. I heard the announcement on the radio, I think, on a Friday afternoon. So I hurriedly packed up my kit, because I was then in digs at Sirens at Evesham, where I'd been sent as a reporter, taking the place of one of our members of staff who had moved on. So I hurriedly packed up my kit and on my motorcycle came back to Cheltenham and reported at our headquarters at College Lawn. But they didn't want to know at that time. But it was on the Sunday that we were actually on parade at the back of College Lawn and heard that war had been declared.
Yes. And so you were there then, you joined. Who else was joining up? Was it all young men?
It was young men. One or two more mature men, one of whom was also from the Echo. He was the advertising manager, and I think he was one who encouraged me to join 2RGH. Then there was a reporter who also joined, so there were three members of the Gloucestershire Echo who joined the Cheltenham Squadron of the regiment.
Early days, like, did they issue you with equipment straight away?
And equipment was very difficult to get. Not everybody had proper uniforms. Some had battle dress, some had sort of service dress, some were issued with overcoats, others had to use their own overcoats. So there's a shortage of uniforms. And, a shortage of everything from transport to arms. Eventually we were equipped with rifles and the shortages were made up.
What about the early training? I mean, they've got you all there, you knew nothing.
Well, the early training was quite primitive. We were a few days in Cheltenham when the unit moved to near Minehead, and there on the moors near Minehead we did a sort of tank practice by getting a group of members together and pretending that they were in a tank and send them marching off around the moors and pretending to come into action against other groups of soldiers who were supposed to be in a tank. It was all very, very primitive and really quite laughable.
So what were the NCOs like? How did they treat you?
Well, the NCOs were all right, because we knew them, some of them, before they joined. And so they were virtually virtually friends, but we towed the line and accepted their orders with an occasional smile.
Was it tough, the training at all?
No, the training wasn't tough. After Minehead, we were sent to Ilfracombe, where we were stationed in the hotels in Ilfracombe, which was rather nice. And we did some training there, a bit of marching about, a bit of radio, and What else could we do in Ilfracombe? Not a lot. But I was interested in radio, and I knew the Morse code. I could send and receive Morse. And so I was sometimes used to teach my troop the Morse code. So I came in useful there, I suppose.
So, I mean, they made use of your skill. They must have been quite pleased that you could do something, you know.
Well, eventually they realised that I had some knowledge, and I was sent on a wireless instructor's course at Bovington, which lasted about 2 months, and I got some very good marks. And when I returned to the unit, the colonel sent for me and I suppose congratulated me on my performance, and I was made his operator in his tank.
Right. Do you remember who the colonel was?
Colonel Burley.
Uh-huh. What sort of a chap was he? Was he regular?
He was from a regular unit, yes. I'm not quite sure which one it was. I'd better not say what I think. But he was a very good colonel, quite strict, but very good in action. And I was not with him when we first went in action, because crew numbers were reduced from 5 to 4, crew members. They dropped the sub-turret gunner out and reduced the crews from 5 to 4, which was quite a good thing, because a sub-turret gunner couldn't do very much in the desert anyway.
So when did you first train on tanks?
We started to train on tanks when we were issued with some primitive Vickers Mark 6 light tanks, which were equipped with a machine gun, and not very good.
Can you tell me about the crewing of that tank?
The crewing of that tank would be the driver, a commander, a gunner. I'm not sure if there were 3 in the turret of those, or just 2. But we didn't have those for very long. We only had about half a dozen at the most. But shortly afterwards, we were issued with some 2-man tanks, which had been intended for the Dutch government. we had those for quite a while, until we got some more modern equipment.
Right. Do you remember what the 2-man tank was called?
It was based on the old Mark 6 Vickers tank, which we had given up.
Yeah.
But they were new, and it was just a driver and a gunner. And I was in one of those with a driver, of course. We did a bit of training around Cambridge, Kettering. But before that, we had been sent from Ilfracombe to Nottinghamshire, where we lived in the mining villages. And the regiment was split up into units, where one unit would deal with radio, another one with driving, and another one with maintenance. So the regiment was split up around the villages in Nottingham. They were Warsop, Cuckney, and Edwinstowe.
And you were doing radio, were you?
I was doing radio, of course, yes.
And what sort of sets were you using? And how was
the sets in those days were very primitive and very inefficient and very big, and we used those even in the first of our Middle East battles in the desert. Eventually, we got some more efficient, up-to-date, and much smaller transceivers. We didn't need then a special receiver and a transmitter and a power unit. It was all based in one unit.
So in Nottinghamshire, the skill levels of the squadron must have lifted quite a bit, mustn't they?
Oh, yes. We were there from, shall we say, January to May, perhaps. But during that time, when there was a danger of invasion from the enemy, the unit was moved to a place in Lincolnshire called Skellingthorpe. And there we were, I suppose, a sort of coastal defence force, equipped with two or three tanks and a few rifles, and living in tents in the woods, right, which we quite enjoyed.
Yeah. This was near the coast.
It must have been near the coast, yes. So we did that for a while, and then we went back to Nottinghamshire, and eventually moved from there to near Kettering, where we did more training with the Dutch tanks, and then we moved from there to near Cambridge, where we still had the Dutch and the Mark 6s, I think. And it was while we were there that the big air raids occurred on London, and we could see from where we were the lights and the flares and the explosions from near Cambridge. So we knew that there was a severe war going on somewhere, and we were not in it. We were out living a life in the country.
So, this period of training, did you have any idea? I mean, did you do any schemes? Did you have any idea how your tanks would be deployed?
We did go on schemes, but a lot of it was in vehicles, and because we didn't have enough tanks to do the job in on a full scale, but we did do schemes. I was then sent on this wireless instructor's course at Bovington in Dorset, so I missed some of it there. And when I'd finished the course, the regiment had moved from Cambridgeshire to near Cranley, in Surrey. So I returned to the regiment at Cranley, where by this time they had some modern Christie suspensioned A-13 tanks.
And what were they like? Were they an improvement?
They were a great improvement, because you could, they were very fast, and they would cross ditches without dipping into them, because they had a long wheelbase with this wonderful suspension. Whereas if you'd gone on the same route in a Mark 6 Vickers, you'd have gone into a ditch and you probably wouldn't have got out again. But with the A-13, you just sailed across the ditches. Eventually, this was improved, and the Crusader was the next tank that we had. And they had a similar suspension, but with an extra bogey, so it was even better than the A-13. This was, I think, the A-15.
Right. So you were feeling quite confident about your vehicles now, then?
We were, and we went over to Wales to carry out the firing of the guns on the ranges there. But
and how effective was that?
Well, we didn't really have enough experience of firing the guns, because there was nowhere to fire them unless you went miles and miles away, and other people were using the ranges as well. So that really, when we went abroad to fight the enemy, as it were, we didn't really have enough experience of firing the guns, I would say. That is my opinion.
So all this training is going on, the Battle of Britain is coming and going. So when did you go abroad?
Well, after Cranley, we did a spell in Sussex. I'm not quite sure why we were there, but we did a spell in Sussex for a week or two. And then we moved to a place in Wiltshire, Warminster.
Oh, yeah.
Warminster.
Yeah.
And there we were able to use the Salisbury Plain for exercises, of course, because a lot of space available there. And I continued my job as wireless instructor at Warminster.
So you were in a tank crew as well?
Yes, yes, I was, yeah. Yes.
And on the Crusader tanks, you, it was a crew of four, wasn't it?
Well, it was five, but it was reduced to four when we got to the Middle East. And I suppose my own view is that having a sub-turret gunner to fight in the desert was pretty useless, and just one more casualty that you might sustain when you could get along without him. So they did reduce the crews. Well, it was here that I was operator in the command tank with the colonel and the adjutant, the driver, and a sub-turret gunner who was the troop sergeant. When it was decided to reduce the crews from five to four, I, being the junior member, only a corporal, was the one who moved out, and the troop sergeant took my place in the turret from the sub-turret. So then I was sent to the echelon, where I took control of the radio of the echelon commander.
And who was the echelon commander?
The echelon commander was Major I just forget his name, but he was a very good commander, and
was this in the UK?
This was, yes. No, this was when we got to Egypt. Sorry,
okay.
We got the Crusaders, new Crusaders, in Egypt.
Right.
No, they were transported to Egypt, and we picked them up near Alexandria.
Right. So when you left the UK, did you, what sort of notice did you get of going?
Not a lot, and we didn't know where we were going. They issued us with sun helmets, of course, which are quite useless. So everywhere we went at that time, we had these sun helmets, so people knew we were going to a hot country. Mm. And it turned out to be Egypt.
How did you get there? Did you
go by sea? We went by sea from the Clyde in the liner. I forgot the name of the liner, but it was very good, a very big ship.
It was a former passenger liner.
It was yes, it had been a passenger liner which had equipped to go on cruises, I suppose. Mm. And I know the name of the thing so well. Anyway, we were down, way down on a lower deck, of course, and it took us quite a long time to get to Egypt, because we went way out into the Atlantic to avoid a submarine attack. And we made a call at Freetown and Cape Town before going round into the Indian Ocean up to the base of the Suez, I suppose, if I remember. And from there, we went by train to a place near Alex. And it was there that we then picked up our tanks and went out into the desert for a bit of training. And it was then decided to reduce the crews from five to four.
Mm. That's right. Did you have an idea? Did you have much information at that time as to what was going on in North Africa and where the Germans were? And
well, the only, yes, I suppose we did, because the boundary between Egypt and Cyrenaica was a wire, a big barbed wire obstruction, I suppose, and it was known that we were going to go up there and through the wire and attack the enemy. So the regiment set off with the tanks on transporters, on the railway, I think it was, and that would take them so far up the desert, somewhere near Mirza Matru, where they would then take the tanks off the flats and possibly put them onto special lorries which carried tanks nearer the front, and then off those lorries and across the desert and through a gap that had been made in the wire, and attacked around the area of El Goubi and later Sidi Rezaig, when it was difficult to tell who was winning the war at that time. Yeah. Because
what do you know, just before we carry on, what did you know about the German tanks and the German
army we'd be up against? Well, we knew what the Germans had. They were some Mark 3s and Mark 4s, PZKW 3s and 4s, and possibly some 2s. And they were equipped with some pretty good guns, 50 millimeter on the 3s, and I think the 4s had some 75 millimeter. So they had some good guns and some pretty good tanks. The tanks that we had were liable to catch fire if they were hit in certain places, but I think the German tanks were diesel and less likely to catch fire.
Was that your big fear? I mean, you must have had some apprehension going into action.
Well, a little, I suppose, but it was people were in pretty good mood, and there was no great fear that I recall about this.
Do you remember your first action?
Well, while I was in the echelon then on the radio there, the Germans broke through where we were and heading for a tremendous mass of transport, which was to feed the 22nd Armoured Brigade, that would be the 2 RGH and the 3rd and 4th CLY, which meant made up the 22nd Armoured Brigade. So all their transport was together, and the Germans came over the hill with the tanks, and all of a sudden an officer came along and said, march on a bearing of so-and-so, and we all turned round and went on this bearing to get away from the advancing German tanks. Well, the effect of that is this, that the first vehicle goes belting along the desert, creating a lot of dust. The next vehicles behind it spread out to avoid the dust, and the vehicles behind them spread out to avoid their dust, so that eventually you get a great wide mass of transport herring away from the Germans. Well, the Germans did get through, and they hit our echelon commander's pickup vehicle, which I might have been in, but it was not my turn, and they killed the driver, and they killed the commander, and the wireless operator, who was a friend of mine, was wounded, but he got away. And that night, when my vehicle, which known as the Gin Palace, because it was especially made for radio equipment, we came to rest that night, and there were about a dozen vehicles with us. The rest had all got scattered, good knows where. So we came to rest, and we had a brew, and the next morning, the sergeant, who was the senior one, said, I'll just have a scout around to see what's about. So he got into a scout car and went up to the nearest hillock, and over the other side where the Germans came down for the night. So we quietly moved away from there and back towards the wire.
Right. I'll stop you just there. Douglas Gerrard, end of reel 1.